are the true artists. Let's get it, let's see what we can uncover.
Cut the deck. It's shuffle time. You are thou. How does it go again?
I am thou, and thou art I.
That's the one. It feels right anyway. I am thou, and thou art I, and thou art listening to Don't Take It Personally, the podcast that takes a deep dive through the inner recesses of Atlas Games' bizarre, wonderful, and one-of-a-kind Persona video games, one at a time. As always, I am one of your hosts, Mayor Howard Vander, and who am I talking to?
And I'm Medium Hollow.
Yes, you can find us on Twitter, because of course you can. Thank you to everyone who wrote in recently. Thank you all for your feedback. I hope you enjoyed the photos we sent you in return. And as always, you can like, subscribe, smash that follow button as we continue our run through the games. And I think this is going to be a popular one because this week we are looking at Persona 5. And I did a lot of research and prep on this one. You know, I made the time to do that. And I think also our audience is going to be really thrilled and probably the most familiar because, you know, while the prior Persona games seem to be getting more successful, to date, Persona 5, with I think 7.2 million copies sold, is the best-selling installment in the franchise. That being said, I think the two interesting trivia notes off the top is it is one of the only games I can think of that got a 10 out of 10 from IGN, and it is also apparently, for gameplay, the longest video game that exists. I don't know how they measure that, though, because, like, you know, you think about a game, like a classic RPG, right, where, okay, there's the story, but as part of getting through it, you need to spend hours grinding, right? You ever have that kind of feeling?
And I'm imagining that a lot of the length of Persona 5 comes from the mechanic where you catch all of the personas that are in the game.
Right, because as we've talked about, like with each of them, there's like the refinement and expansion on like the database, right? It's basically like a Pokédex. Right, except it's for psychological projections.
I'm pretty familiar with the Pokédex, honestly. I'm a bit of a Pokemon fan myself. I've been playing.
Are you a game freak? Right, because aren't they the guys who made Pokemon?
I think so. I think Game Freak made Pokemon and then became the Pokemon company, but they're also still Game Freak. I don't really understand.
I'm gonna look up what happened to Game Freak, but so like, are you a ground floor Pokemon guy?
Oh, 100%. I've been playing Pokemon since Red and Blue. It's it's one of the earliest games that I remember playing. I've played every single installment of Pokemon. I've gotten them all.
Wait, every single? You literally caught them all and caught them all?
I've never actually completed the Pokédex. I've been playing Pokemon for almost 30 years, and I have never actually done that.
And that's with Persona 5, right? Like, this is the longest game. You've been playing Pokemon for 30 years.
And it's just the idea of catching them all, especially today in 2023, is crazy because there are over 1,000 different Pokemon. Not all of them are even really accessible, there are also like 13 or maybe 18 mythic Pokemon that are only released through like special events from Nintendo. Like if you didn't get, for, you know, a decade, it was like if you didn't get the super special Mew that you could get at GameStop on this particular weekend, then it might be a decade before you have a chance to get another Mew.
Yeah, and that seems unfair, but like, I mean, I had Blue for the Game Boy and Team Bulbasaur, because it's worth it for Razor Leaf. But I remember like how you need the link cable to trade certain Pokemon, and like Pikachu couldn't evolve into Raichu until you traded it. So like,
that's actually no, that's not how it works at all.
That's not how it works.
No, you needed a Thunderstone to evolve Pikachu, unless you were playing
right. No. Okay, so Thunderstone was Raichu, but there were some of them I recall that only evolved by trading, which required the Game Boy transfer cable, which was like $20, and you also needed a friend who had one of the Pokemon games. Right. Yeah, so were, how is that really different than modern DLC?
I would say it's pretty different. You're not downloading anything. You're certainly not paying for extra content. I mean, if I want to send my Machoke to a friend so that it evolves into a Machamp, and then just see, the problem with that is you really, especially back then, you really had to rely on the honor system, because the trade evolutions are always really strong, right? But
bigger is not always better. Raichu always seem more limited than Pikachu.
No, that's just nostalgia and media bias speaking. Raichu is always going to be better than Pikachu.
Well, he is bigger.
At least until up until later generations, because of Pikachu's status as a mascot for Pokemon, they gave him a special item. If you have Pikachu hold a light ball, it doubles his special attack stat, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, wow.
To make it a lot more viable. Otherwise, Raichu clears it stat-wise across the board.
Yeah, well, because, I mean, there's something to be said for, you know, also how you level them, right? And, like, because even from the outset, like, it's a deceptively complex game in terms of mechanics. But, like, back to why I was always Bulbasaur, that was, you know, you kind of have to grind through the mid-tier Ivysaur evolution. But when you're Venusaur, you unlock Razor Leaf. And that one has a 90% critical rate. So even against its, like, all but its elemental absorbers, you know, even things that are strong against grass type, it's still going to critical almost every time. By the time you're that strong, critical knocks everybody out.
And if you can invest in your speed effort values, because speaking of the way you grind your Pokemon, making them better, I think that, as I don't want to say more of a layperson, but someone who hasn't really played the games that much, you may not realize, but each Pokemon that you defeat in battle has what's known as an effort value. Oh. And that effort value increases the base stat, a base stat of the Pokemon that KOs it, right? So let's say Rattata, for example. Rattata usually gives one speed EV. So if you kill a Rattata, then that counts as one speed EV or effort value added to your Pokemon. So say your Ivysaur kills a Rattata, that's plus one base speed. And that increases over time and can drastically affect the stat gains of your Pokemon. So grinding is actually a little bit more complicated than it may seem at first glance. Like, there's a really good example in a video by Jaden Animations about her first time nuzlocking a Pokemon game. And it was Pokemon Emerald, I believe, that she played. And in it, there is a chunk of time where she spends grinding for experience on Meryl, which has HP EVs. So it raises the base HP stat of your Pokemon, right?
Ah.
So she spends several hours massacring these Meryl, right? Kills maybe 80 of them, increases the base HP of her Pokemon, and then is able to go in and survive an attack by the fallen gym leader by like one or two HP, right? So if she hadn't spent all that time killing those Meryl to raise her base HP, then that same attack would have killed. So yeah, there's a lot to it. There's a lot more to grinding in Pokemon. And I think it's really interesting that you talk about Venusaur and Razor Leaf, because really, Razor Leaf is not the most broken thing about Venusaur, at least in Red, Blue, and Yellow, because those games were so broken and buggy, right? There's a certain interaction that you could do with Venusaur that would absolutely clear the entire game, because Venusaur has a move called Leech Seed, which saps a small amount of the enemy's HP and gives it to Venusaur. It's a fixed amount of
HP. I remember Leech Seed. I got rid of that early on. It was weak as hell. That was the secret?
Yeah, it definitely seems weak as hell, but when you combine that with the move Toxic, which inflicts a poison that doubles every turn, Leech Seed is bugged to do the same amount as the toxic damage every turn. So you are doubling the amount of poison damage that your opponent takes, and you're basically clearing any Pokemon that isn't super effective against your Venusaur in maybe three turns. Absolutely broken mechanic.
Speaking of broken mechanic, I'm thinking, like, you know how in Mortal Kombat, like, Noob Saibot was the original hidden character that became its own, like, embraced meme and then fully-fledged character? Like, did anything like that happen with Missing Number, the famously glitched Pokemon in the original?
No,
because I don't think I played any of the later games.
No, Missing No is something that Game Freak likes to try and pretend never happened. It was just another one of the terrible bugs in the very broken game.
So for the home listener, though, walk us through then the Red and Blue exclusive Missing No.
Honestly, I don't know too much about the way that it worked. I just remember the way that Missing No interacted with the infinite item glitch. But I don't know how.
What's
Missing
the infinite
no
item
in
glitch?
In Red and Blue, there's a way if you talk to a certain NPC and then fly to a certain town and surf along the edge, it's Cinnabar. If you surf up and down.
Because that's the same way you got Missing No.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. So you actually have to see Missing No in order to activate the infinite item bug.
Okay, so how does that work? Because doesn't meeting Missing No, because it's basically this garbled sprite, because like it's returning a null value in what Pokemon is supposed to appear, is my understanding. Like that's what's happening as you encounter it. How does that lead to an infinite item thing? Because doesn't it break the game once you encounter it?
No, it doesn't actually break the game. It just acts as though you are fighting any Pokemon. You can actually catch Missing No, but the really weird thing about it is if it goes into a single battle, if you try and use Missing No one time, it will always evolve after that battle into a Kangaskhan.
Okay. What?
Yeah, just always Kangaskhan.
It's
for
no
some
idea.
Reason. Yeah,
Missing No was the end.
Turn into that.
Because like there are some games where it's like you can trigger a glitch in that, but like from that point on, the game cartridge is like permanently bricked up in a certain way that like it breaks the game while it is still playable, right?
Yeah, there's something, there are glitches in Red and Blue that do that too, I think,
Yeah.
where you can
But
just
wasn't
walk through the environment.
Pokemon Legends Arceus or whatever that one is, wasn't that one dragged for being very buggy at launch?
I'm not sure if that one was, but I know that Scarlet and Violet, the most recent one, was absolutely lambasted for being
Maybe that's the
buggy
one.
as hell. Just absolutely insanely buggy on launch. But
Like, what kind of bugs do you run into in a Pokemon game? Other than Caterpie, am I right?
I mean, there's a lot of them. There's a lot of bug type Pokemon, if that's what you mean. And some of
I
them
mean, it
are
could be
actually
what I
pretty
mean.
good. Like, bug
I'd
type
be
Pokemon are
curious, like,
interesting because
Butterfree was interesting because it's a bug, but it's also flying and it has psychic damage abilities.
Butterfree is actually really broken in later gens because it has an ability Compound Eyes, which increases accuracy, and it also has Sleep Powder, which is a 70% accurate move. So, with the
So it's
ability Compound Eyes,
160% accurate.
essentially, it's always going to hit Sleep Powder, so you'll always be able to put your opposing Pokemon to sleep, probably first turn. Always first turn if you're holding a Focus Sash, because that guarantees you survive with 1 HP against any hit that would kill you, at least from full HP. So it makes Butterfree really broken early game in most later gens after Gen 3 when abilities are first instituted.
Well, but is it realistic to expect that people have a Butterfree, which is, is it Caterpie or Weedle? No, Caterpie, because Weedle has the spike. Caterpie, you have to grind that one, and when it becomes Metapod, it's basically useless. It's just there to be swapped out, so it gains XP, so it can evolve into Butterfree and finally be useful.
Yeah, but luckily that's only 3 levels and it's 7 to 10, so it evolves really, really early and gives you a decent base stat boost on that evolution. Like,
But
it's
like a
usually a
child
huge
going
benefit.
from 7 to 10 is a long time. Not as long as grinding out like early game Pokemon, so you can evolve your mons, but it's just I guess a lot of glitches and exploits like that are discovered by people who are just playing the game more obsessively or forensically than a thing that's likely to happen organically. I'm sorry. That was way too negative, and it makes it sound like I don't like Pokemon. Go ahead, because I'm actually fascinated hearing all this deep lore and nerdy stuff, because I didn't even know.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's a cool franchise. For years I've been looking forward to playing each new one, even if I know I'm not gonna like it very much, because realistically, I haven't really truly loved a Pokemon game since like 2012 when HeartGold and SoulSilver came out.
Okay, now what about those ones that, like if you like all of them, you love these ones. Well, why these ones?
Well, I don't know. I think the transition into 3D in the later gens, Gen 6, 7, and onward, just it really loses some of the charm of the games for me, from when they were in the 2D perspective. And it just, I don't know, it takes something away. I still love Pokemon and I still always put in the time. I've played each one dozens of different times. But yeah, I don't know. And
That's, I mean,
replayability
that's
is
a common
interesting.
problem with long-running franchises, right? Final Fantasy, if you go back to our first episode, like that one famously had a highly polarizing switch to 3D over time. Now it's widely hailed as like some of the best-looking games on the planet. Pokemon, I don't think, because it's Nintendo-based, it's ever going to be like hailed for its graphical fidelity. But like, I think they've established like a consistent and appealing art style.
I don't know. I think they could definitely try harder, at least graphically and environmentally.
Yeah.
But I'd say...
I mean, a lot of flat rolling hills, yeah.
Yeah, especially in the latest game. That's one of the bigger complaints is a lot of the space just feels really empty.
Yeah. You ever played Quest 64? That was like that.
Mystic Quest?
No,
that's a different thing.
That's a different thing. We're getting off topic here. Pokemon. Do you think, though, that, like, making the graphics, like, more photorealistic is kind of for its own sake? Like, I don't know. Or is it more like, do the Pokemon games need to be grittier?
No, I don't think they need to be grittier. I just think they need to be more polished on release.
Yeah. I mean, because I'm trying to think of, like, ways to enhance the visuals. And I'm like, problem is, if you're then doing photorealistic models of these characters, somebody's going to be like, why don't we include battle damage? And next thing you know, Gengar's missing an eye.
Which would be pretty cool.
Do you think so? Do you really want to see your beloved little Pokemons getting, like, shred up? Like Soldier of Fortune, body damage locations and stuff?
I don't know. See, for me, I don't... They're just pixels. You know, who cares?
But they frame themselves as such, too. Because, like, you kind of, I think, are encouraged to form a sort of bond with your digital creations. Like a Tamagotchi, you can name them if you want. And they all kind of look cute, but also when they die in battle, they're knocked out, right? There's an inherent, like, soft touch to it, considering that it's like a surprisingly hardcore, you know, adventure RPG franchise. But I don't know. It's weird. I'm suddenly having visions of, like, what is it? Never mind. Frank Miller didn't make video games, but, like, that kind of gritty take on Pokemon. Detective Pikachu kind of is.
I actually had a lot of fun with that movie.
I mean, how do you not just kind of squeal a little bit, seeing a bunch of chubby little Bulbasaurs waddling down a river? The problem with that movie is that this kid is brilliant enough to uncover a sinister plot at the behest of big science and capital, but he can't figure out why this Pikachu that knew his dad has the same voice, the exact same speaking voice as his father until the end and the big reveal. I'm like, I don't think you're much of a detective, Tim.
I really wish that the rumors were true about the voice of Pikachu and Detective Pikachu being Danny DeVito. Do you remember being spread around?
I don't remember that being spread around, but, like, I hear that and I believe it to be true. I can see that. I can hear that. Pikachu in a deerstalker cap being like, come with me, kid. We're going to find the asshole who did this. And we're going to get you your dad. It's me. That really hurt my throat for some reason. Do you want to hear my impression of Colin Farrell doing Danny DeVito?
Absolutely.
Okay. Ach, it's me. And here's, see if you can guess this one. It's, Ach. Choose one of these three Pokeballs and to be on your way.
Kenneth Branagh.
No, close. It's Colin Farrell doing an impression of Professor Oak. An impressor, if you will. Much like how audiences all across North America and Europe and Japan were impressed by Persona 5. And I mean, like, obviously you can only do so much with a game that expansive, that just has so much in it, right? you know, we could do 10 episodes on. I don't think we'll even come halfway into the Beast, but I think that's a good point to put a pin in it, leave the audience wanting more. That being said, if you want to help us catch them all, by M, I mean your M-mails, email the show at personallypod@gmail.com. Like, subscribe, smash that follow button.
Or just smash.
Yeah. Smash what's around you. Objects. People who bother you. People you respect, even. Keep them on their toes. In the meantime, where can people get in touch with you on that ongoing dumpster fire Twitter?
They can find me at Medium Hollow. That's a second M after the second M in yes. Medium.
But there's three M's, not four. Because if correct. You say second and second, people will be like, so it's Medium Hollow.
But no, it's the second after the second, because it's yeah. two M's at the end, but the first right. M of the two M's at the end is
I think
the second
if you
M of the first M.
Well, yeah, like, I know that because I know you, but, like, I guess maybe at first hearing, what if you said it like, okay, just trial balloon, what if you said, like, and I'm Medium Hollow? Like, maybe would people hear that and organically figure it out? Because saying Vander_IAM, it's what I say, but it sounds unwieldy, you know? It's not like, you know, catch me at MayorV24, right? Do we need to rebrand our Twitter handles?
Yeah, I think it's probably time.
We really... really could have picked better ones, but one thing that we couldn't have done better is pick the name of our show, which I'll drop in the outro. So until next time, when we're going to be, Jesus Christ, what are we even going to be looking at? Yeah, crap, I closed the notes. All right, next time we are going to be looking at the offshoot series within the Persona franchise, Shin Megami Tensei. So Game Boy fans, you have a different kind of hardcore strategy to look at, except this one's much more about theology. In the meantime, though, enjoy your time, sanitize your hands, and whatever you do, don't take it personally.
Personally.
Next time, for sure.